How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus, terms and conditions apply.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, Sunday night edition. We're here with you every weekend from 9 to midnight. Thank you for sharing your times with us on Darkness Radio. Got a good show tonight, Tim. We're going to be talking to cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman. And remember, it was last week we did the story, Bree Sanders brought on the story about the Bigfoot fingerprint that was found.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to talk to Lauren about that tonight and see what his take is on it. We're going to talk to him about some of the other crazy cryptid sightings that have been going on, and especially these Black Panthers. I want to talk to him about that. All these black cat sightings are being seen all over the world.
And later on, Lauren will have a nice recipe for Bigfoot stew.
Yes.
So exactly. When you catch your Bigfoot, skin it and kill it and
Bigfoot
throw it in a pot.
Chili.
Yeah, that'll be good stuff.
Yes, we've got that coming up, so stay tuned. And then we're going to also be talking to another Bigfoot investigator, and he's going to come on and give us an update on a couple of cases he's been working on as well. So stay tuned. Got a great show for you. But right now, it's time to go to our book critic.
It's time to welcome our book critic and cunning linguist of culture, refinement, and stories that will make your skin crawl. Live from the tower we keep her locked in, Susan Cumming.
Good evening, Susan.
Good evening.
Thank you for joining us here tonight. So I got a new book for us again. You like these personal ghost story books, right? And this is this is another one. What's the name of this story?
This is Dark Force, the terrifying and tragic story of the Bean family by William Bean Jr.
Oh, sure. We actually had
Bill Bean.
Yeah, we had Bill Bean on our show, I think, what was it, about a year and a half ago, right, Tim? Yeah.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, about a year and a half ago. So, I'll admit, I've never actually read the book yet. I mean, his story was fascinating, but I'd like to know, what did you think of the book?
You know, the story is fascinating, but I think that we really should start a business, landcheck.com, where people pay us $29.95 to figure out anybody die on your property. I mean, it seems to always be attached to the land, of course. You know how it is.
Hauntedlandcheck.com, I think we have to call
land
it.
Landcheck,
right?
Is what we were going to call it.
Yeah, Haunted Land Check.
I'm going to think twice before I buy any property.
Yeah.
You know, tragic story. I mean, lots of tragic deaths in his family.
Listen to the way she says it with her. She's like laughing. tragic story.
So tragic.
This one's horrible.
I was still laughing at the landcheck.com.
I gotcha.
So I'm sorry. On to the book. It is a tragic story. Lots of tragedy in his family. Don't know if it's attached to this particular house, but they had four entities that seemed to be present in the house. They had names for them. They seemed to be very ominous figures. One was called the Undertaker, black hair, black beard, black eyes, a woman with fiery red hair, and a dark force, I guess, which is probably where the title of the book comes from, with red glowing eyes. Not nice entities, that's all I can say. Did a lot of nasty things, but the part that made me sad in the book was, of course, you know, besides the tragic deaths, is animals being killed. It just, it doesn't leave...
Ooh, there was animals killed by the spirits as well?
Yeah. Well, should I say that the cat, the family cat, Fluffy, disappeared.
Fluffy. I'm sorry, Bill. I don't mean to laugh. That's just...
I know. It's like having a dog named Spot. But
exactly.
Yeah. But, Fluffy disappeared, and Mom went to bed. and woke up the next morning, and there were huge clumps of fur in a semicircle around her that were, of course, you guessed it, fluffies. So, you know, not a lot of details. I mean, I am Sherlock Holmes. Why is this happening? You know, did they check out the land? They looked a little into the land. It was sort of, well, we were told that this ravine behind the house was used by Indian tribes and the militia when they came through. But there's not a lot of information, not a lot to substantiate why these events were taking place. And I always like to get to the meat of things.
Sure.
And it just didn't give you enough of that. And it sort of left you hanging, wanting more. It gave the tragic list of all of the family members that died at the very end of the book, all prematurely, very young, strange deaths. So I don't know if the family's cursed, but the four entities didn't sound like they were a lot of fun or you'd invite them to a party. But it doesn't give you anything more than that. The house is still there. You don't know if anything else is going on. Nothing was really settled.
So do you think they left it open for a part two?
Yeah, you know, it sounds like, and he even says, you know, more to come in my next book.
Oh, okay. All right, well, so it's a precursor kind of book, letting you know how it all started for him.
Yeah,
interesting. Well, we'll
yeah.
have to talk to Bill soon, Tim, and see if we can get him back on the show and update us on what's been going on with the house.
Absolutely.
I would love to find out. I mean, after reading this book, where did this all start? I mean, there's got to be some history there somewhere. There's got to be some history. So, you know, it left me hanging.
Well, but overall story-wise, was it a good story?
You know, it was a good story.
I mean, for a horrifying, terrifying ordeal, was it a good story?
I don't think any of these are good stories. Again,
right.
I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say I enjoy reading about other people's tragedies because it really is. I mean, I can't imagine families living this way. But overall, I mean, it was good. It was engaging. Again, not enough detail for me. I'd like to know a little bit more. I'm sitting there going, okay, when are they going to bring somebody in? When are they going to try to figure out what's going on? Why are all these things are happening? Didn't give a lot of that. It was just a personal account of what the family endured. So it was good. It wasn't as creepy as The Uninvited, where you had dead babies hanging from trees and demonic clowns running around, but it was good.
All right. The gauge, Tim, the gauge, the bar has been lifted now. If
yeah,
it doesn't
it
include dead babies and killer clowns, you got a lot to live up to in Susan's book.
Yep.
I'm going to gauge everything off of off of demonic clowns and I mean,
well, that's
The Uninvited
horrible.
Was just creepy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I feel bad for the family. It just left me feeling sad.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Susan. We will you're not going to be with us next week. We have a special guest, and we won't say who it is yet, but we have a special guest book critic that's going to join us next week, Tim.
It's a demonic clown with a dead baby.
Yes.
Yeah, who knew?
Yes. Yeah, his name is Boingo. So, no, but we have a special guest book critic that'll be joining us next week, and this will be his first time ever reviewing a book, Tim. So it's going to be interesting to...
Well, demonic clowns don't read very well.
Yeah,
so,
not
yeah,
so much.
Not so,
not
much.
So much.
Yeah.
Well, Susan, thank you very much. Be safe. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Bye now.
All right, everybody, stay tuned because you know what always follows right after we do the book review, Timothy?
Yeah, I take a short break. No, I'm kidding.
No, well, usually, yeah. But no, still, we're going to go to the mistress of... paranormal news? I don't know. I got nothing for her here. Just
all
go
right.
ahead and hit the theme.
We'll do.
Now it's time for all the news that's in the news from the world of the paranormal with the supernatural stories of the strange, national news correspondent and mistress of misery, Bree Sanders.
Good evening, Bree.
Hi, guys.
Well, there we go with that crazy old broken down teletype. So you got to get that work done, would you? It sounds horrible. So, you know, we're having Lauren Coleman on the show tonight, the cryptozoologist, where he's going to follow up on the story you did last week about the Bigfoot fingerprint.
Oh, cool.
So he's gonna weigh in on his thoughts with this Bigfoot fingerprint and what he believes it really might be, if it is a Bigfoot fingerprint or what. And he's also going to fill us in on some of the other cryptozoological sightings that are going on. But I wanted to let you know we're following up on your news story from last week. So where are we off to start off this week?
We're starting in Florida.
Okay.
We have some food stories.
Oh, good. Food stories, Tim.
Food stories.
I love me some food.
I think what we should do, and Adrian talked to me about this. He's talking about putting together a booklet of all of the strange, like non-paranormal, just the really strange stories he collects through the year. And I think you should write a book, Brie, called When Food Goes Bad. Right. So it's kind of a play on words.
Forward by Rachel Ray.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking Giada.
That's a good idea.
Wow, she's hot. Yeah, but you go do a book called When Food Goes Bad and just incorporate all of these bizarre food stories of people being beaten with food or attacked with sausages and turkeys. So who's beaten who with what this week?
All right. A Florida man has been charged with domestic battery after he slammed a hot sweet potato pie in his girlfriend's face during their Thanksgiving dinner. This is a 46-year-old man. He threw the pie at his girlfriend because he didn't like the food. So, I don't know. The report actually says that he was upset with the meal his girlfriend had fixed for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. They began arguing, and he picked up the pie that they'd just taken out of the oven and smashed in her face.
Yeah. Well, it's better, on the bright side of things, it's better than him, shoving her head inside the turkey, I guess. Right? That would be even more disturbing. I'm going to stuff that turkey. Come here, you.
Man, if I had a dollar for every time a girl put her sweet potato pie in my face, I'd be rich.
And where are we off to next, Bree?
we're going back to Florida. This is just another example of holiday cheer. A Florida man who lived with his parents, to start off. He lives with his parents. He's been charged with attacking his father with their Christmas tree and its metal stand. According to the sheriff's department, 37-year-old Thomas Edward Lackey was arrested and charged with felony assault last week after he threw their 3-foot Christmas tree at his father and missed him. But then he tried to use the steel base to attack him. So people are nuts.
It's beginning to look a lot like murder. What the hell?
Crazy.
People are nuts in Florida. They want to kill people with sweet potato pies and Christmas trees.
Well, the sandwich attack from, I think, a week ago.
Right.
In Florida also.
Sandwich attack. Wow, it is crazy. Not good news.
Another attack, actually, with a Christmas ornament there was a party going on. This was in Sacramento. And a neighbor came over to the party. I guess he was just drunk, and he started attacking people with a knife. This was on Thanksgiving. He began waving a knife at people that were on the lawn, and he actually got several people. He cut their clothes, and one person decided to fight back, and they used a candy cane lawn ornament to fend him off, and he actually got him, and they held him until the police came.
What did he use to fend him off?
A lawn ornament that's a little candy cane. It's a 2-foot tall candy cane.
I swear to God, if you come anywhere closer, I'm going to put this candy cane where the sun don't shine. Well, that is just frightening.
Hilarious.
What's gone wrong with people? The world is out of control. Well, Bree, we have to take our first break. Stick with us. We'll be back with more strange tales of the supernatural and just plain weird with national news correspondent Bree Sanders. Good evening. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Joining me all the way from a state of misery, we've got the lovely and talented national news correspondent Bree Sanders with us. Bree, where are we off to next here in the United States?
We're going to San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
Last week, a man rammed his truck into a woman's car on a highway. I think it was Friday. He was going more than 100 miles an hour. And his reason that he told police was that God told him that she needed to be taken off of the road. Now, the truck rear-ended her. I mean, 100 miles an hour, that's insane, Both cars, it should have been a fatal accident. And both cars actually they spun across a median and then came to a stop. They're both fine, no injuries or anything. But how crazy is that?
That's insane. So, then it must be God's intervention. He just wanted her off the road. He didn't want her dead.
Right.
Because if... take her off the road. Although I've driven past a lot of people like that here in Minnesota, Tim, that I'm pretty sure the Lord wants me to take off the road.
Yeah, God does typically have road rage incidents.
Unfortunately, though, I drive a purple PT Cruiser, so I'm not... God has plans for me to take people off the road. He just didn't give me the right vehicle to do it.
I think God wants you to crash your PT Cruiser,
actually. Have you heard my horn?
Yeah, I have.
It's like a chihuahua with gas. That's all I get coming out. People are not afraid of my purple PT Cruiser. Sounded like such a good idea when I was a Vikings fan. Oh!
Yeah, when you were a Vikings fan.
I know, I'm still a Vikings fan. It's just been a brutal season, man.
They're in first place.
They're in first place. They're the best of the worst, is all I can say.
That's right.
All right, so where are we off to next year, Bree?
We're going to Wisconsin.
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah.
Speaking of the best of the worst, no, I'm just kidding, Wisconsinites. We love you.
Poor Wisconsin. A member of a religious sect is being charged with keeping another member's corpse in her bathroom. The prosecutors accused a woman named Tammy Lewis, 36-year-old, and a man named Alan Bushy of leaving a 90-year-old that was named Magdalene Middlesworth. They left her body on the toilet in Lewis's home after she died there in March. A criminal complaint said that Alan Bushy led the Order of the Divine Will sect and told Lewis that God would revive Middlesworth. So he convinced her to work with him and keep her body there. And the body was found a couple months back, actually, after Middlesworth's family was concerned about her. And, you know, they think that they were leaving her there to collect her Social Security payments.
Oh.
But the craziest part to me is I don't know if the case is still going on and this is why it was printed this week or what the deal was, but Tammy Lewis was fined $300. Like, that was the case. As far as I know, that was her punishment.
For leaving him on the pooper? $300. Next case, please. They're too busy working with drunk Packer fans. They got real cases and issues to deal with there in Wisconsin.
Right.
So this is our second weird toilet story. Now, didn't you have the other lady who became fused to the toilet a few weeks ago?
It happened a while ago, but she became fused to the toilet.
She was on the toilet for like 3 years, right? Her boyfriend just was like, I'll bring you your sandwich in there. And he let her, her butt actually grew around the toilet seat.
Yes, they had to surgically remove the toilet
seat. And now this lady just gives out halfway through a poop, and they just leave her there? I don't know. Tim,
I don't know if she died on the toilet.
It would be awkward to be in the bathroom, you know, trying to take a shower, and old Grandma Peapod is sitting there staring at you from, you know, the grave while you're, I'm already humbled enough being naked alone in the shower. I just couldn't handle having somebody else dead in there watching me. Ugh, frightening stuff. Where are we off to next?
Actually, one more criminal story.
Okay.
Police in Omaha have arrested a man who's suspected of leaving greasy graphic imprints on the windows of stores, churches, and schools. They call him the Butt Bandit. A 35-year-old man was caught in the act by police. And it happened all the way back, began in the spring of 2007, a mystery man visited businesses at night, pressing his naked behind, sometimes his groin, sometimes both, on windows. And I guess he made the marks with Vaseline and lotion. And it's the same. They actually caught him last year at a middle school on a surveillance camera. That's creepy. But anyway, the past two summers, he hit business after business. And he would stop over the fall and the winter. But during the summer and spring, he was doing it.
So he just wasn't as committed to the job during the cold months. You know, I bet his butt stuck to one window too many times in the cold, and that's what broke him of that habit real quick. Well, you know what, though? You can't blame the guy, because as I did some research on this guy, the Butt Bandit is a descendant of the Butt Pirate. So, you know, I mean, that just is part of the family.
Nice.
No?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Where are we off to next?
I just want to throw this in here quickly because I thought this was hilarious. There's a group of supporters of pole dancing that have started a petition to get pole dancing into the Olympics by the time they're in London, which is, I don't know, just a couple years down the road.
Okay.
Now, they're quoted as actually saying that it's automatically assumed that it has something to do with stripping, but it's not stripping at all. They also are quoted as arguing that it's on par with ice skating and everything else in the Olympics, likening it to rock climbing, saying also that they're the most skilled and safest athletes that would be at the London Olympics if it goes through.
So, well, if that's the case, then Tim's going to start a public outcry for professional wrestling to be a part of the Olympics. Because I've been hearing for years from Tim how these guys are some of the most skilled and professional athletes, even more powerful and more athletic than, like, football players. So,
did you watch the celebrity wrestling?
No.
It was awesome. Danny Bonaduce and Dennis Rodman and Trishel from The Real World.
How did I miss this? So basically it's everybody that was ever once on The Surreal Life is now a celebrity wrestler?
Exactly, yeah.
Excellent.
They taught them how to do it. So
that's pretty funny. Good news. All right, where are we off to next?
I wanted to mention, we talked about, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, we talked about this guy named John Podesta, who, he was the White House Chief of Staff under Bill Clinton.
Right.
And now he's part of Obama's transition team.
Mm-hmm.
And basically him and a few other people in the White House and elsewhere, they're urging Barack Obama to release classified documents about sightings of alien spaceships that are, you know, in the file. They have written to Obama, pressing him to reveal the contents of America's X-Files. Now, in a letter, the Extraterrestrial Phenomenon Political Action Committee asked Mr. Obama to end the six-decade truth embargo regarding an extraterrestrial presence, which is engaging the human race. They hope to have gotten at least 40,000 signatures in support of their campaign by the time he is inaugurated in January. Now, like I said, John Podesta is part of this, and Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, he's actually expected to land a cabinet position also. He is backing it up 100%. And Bill Richardson, actually, he's a UFO enthusiast. He's written a foreword to a book on the Roswell incident in New Mexico. And it's a big deal. I mean, they're making a big deal out of it. Campaigners believe that the corpses of humanoid aliens have been locked away by the government. And Governor Richardson has urged the Pentagon to disclose what really happened. And last year, he insisted that there had been a cover-up. And, you know, recently, they have released documents in Britain and France that pertain to UFOs and all that stuff. They've kind of taken those out of, you know, secrecy. And so they're saying that it's putting a lot of pressure on the United States. It makes the government look bad if we don't do the same thing.
Well, yeah, so, but we've been talking about that for years on our show that, you know, everybody else is coming forward. All Canada, Russia, England, France, they've all come forward and shared and said, you know, yeah, there's definitely something going on. Unless, of course, you want to be one of the conspiracy theorists who says, well, you know, it's the reason we're not admitting to it is because all the craft they keep seeing might be ours.
Right.
So, right. I mean, there's always that. Well, we've got about 40 seconds left here. Do you have another quick story before we go to break?
Ooh, I do.
Okay.
We might have to finish it up when we come back.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Where is this? This is in Iowa. People's Baptist Church pastor Dave Clark said he disagrees with the paranormal activity investigation that took place at Oakland Cemetery last Saturday night. Investigators were there all night, and he actually asked people to come to the church and pray that they would not find evidence of this. And 50 people showed up to do it. He's quoted as saying, people are buried there for a reason because we know that they're gone, and he said the bigger thing is looking for the living amongst the dead is the strange part. He doesn't understand it. So basically, the bottom line is that a lot of people that go to his church have relatives buried there, and they, you know, they're very upset by it.
Oh, sure. All right. Well, I think you have a follow-up to that, too, don't you?
I do.
All right. Well, we'll do that when we come back. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to Paranormal News from Around the Nation with Miss Bree Sanders right here on your home for Paranormal News every week, Darkness Radio. Good evening. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. With your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, our national news correspondent, Bree Sanders, is with us. If you have news stories from around the United States you'd like to share with Bree and you'd like her to cover, just go to darknessradio.com, click on the news desk. There you'll find a link to the lovely Bree. You can send off news stories to her, and she will work them into the shows. And Bree, how many stories do you usually pull a week from references that are sent out to you?
Oh, probably 10, 12.
See, great. So you get a lot of your stories from people referring them over to you.
Definitely.
So, yeah, please help out and, you know, keep those stories rolling because we do find some really great stories from our listeners. We appreciate that. Speaking of, where are we off to next?
I'm going to follow up on what we just talked about.
Oh, right. Okay. And this was in Iowa, correct?
I believe, it's in Iowa.
Right. And now what had happened was this group was going to do a paranormal investigation. They'd gotten approval to investigate the cemetery. But the church leader decided that, you know, he would take it upon himself with his churchgoers to pray that they wouldn't find any kind of evidence of the dead there because there's family members and they didn't want to turn it into kind of a circus. But now you've actually got the report of what happened from the investigator's point of view, correct?
Right.
Okay, where are we off?
Basically, they found as far as they're saying, they really found no evidence to say that it's haunted. He said they're saying that they failed to uncover anything out of the ordinary, and most of the things that they thought could have been evidence could be attributed to human factors. The leader of the group, it's Iowa Paranormal, is the group, and he said, you know, I wish we could have caught something. And he said, in this kind of field of investigating, 80% of cases can easily be disproved, which you and I both know. But they thought that they saw a glowing light, and it actually turned out to be a light coming from across the highway that was reflecting off of a tombstone. They heard female voices and other noises that they got on their recorders, but they're saying a lot of people came out to see what they were doing. A lot of people came out to watch, and there were a lot of females there. So, you know, it's hard, especially outdoors with so many noises and stuff like that. It would be really hard. But
right. That's what I've always been kind of against. People always want to know why we don't do events to the Gettysburg battlefields. I just don't get being outside in a battlefield environment. There's just too much noise contamination, planes flying over, cars, you know.
Definitely.
You know, just too much weird noises out there.
Yeah.
All right, so they didn't find anything, or at least nothing that they could actually document because there were too many looky-loos in the area.
Nope.
Yeah, that's why I don't know, where do you weigh in on this? You're a paranormal investigator too, Bree. Do you go to cemeteries, really?
I don't like to. I mean, the thing is, here's what's hard about being, you know, a paranormal investigator. It's hard to get into places.
Yeah.
It's hard to get permission to get into places, and I'm not somebody to want to go trespass or do anything like that. So sometimes you feel like that's your only option. You know,
right?
Someplace outside, and but again, you can get in trouble there for trespassing. A lot of people just instantly assume you're doing, you know, something bad like vandalizing, or you know, and you could get blamed with that even if it wasn't you because it happens so much. I don't
exactly.
know. I think it's not such a good idea personally. But no.
Well, more often than not, you got to also worry about the vagrants and people that. That hang out in the cemeteries and will stay the night there because it's a safe place for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes you just got to be a little bit more worried about, not as Jane Grant said, they're not so much worried about the dead, it's the living that freak them out. So,
definitely.
Be careful when you're in these kind of places.
Definitely.
All right,
where
are we off to next?
There was an article, actually, on the religious subject that religion may help extend your life. Basically, they are saying that attending a weekly religious service, regardless of what your faith is, it might lower your risk of death by 20% compared to people who don't attend services. They basically said that, you know, it could be kind of the sense of community or support that you get when you go to church, or that they're less depressed when they join in the churches, because it's pretty uplifting, I'm sure, when you're at service, you know.
Sure.
But they actually tried to control data for this stuff, and they came up with the conclusion that weekly religious service attendance was responsible for a 20% reduction in the risk of death, and attending less than once a week, but still attending, was responsible for a 15% drop in the risk of death. Now, the results were published in the Journal of Psychology and Health. It was a big study. It included nearly 95,000 women from all over the U.S. They were all between 50 and 79 years old when it started, and each woman filled out extensive, you know, forms about their health history, all that stuff. And they basically, it went on for 7.7 years, and that was their conclusion. But the funny thing, this is kind of strange, they threw this in at the end. Attending religious service didn't improve the risk of death from cardiovascular disease for some reason.
Really?
I don't know what that, yeah. And I know, you know, I think that's the number one killer for women, cardiovascular disease?
I don't know. But I thought it was death by sandwich in a Volvo or being suffocated by a sweet potato pie. Either one of those could have been the...
Wow. Anyway.
It is on the rise, according to the news stories.
Yes.
All right.
I can prove it.
Where are we off to next?
I have a few stories this week of places that they are finding to be haunted. The first one is in Maryland. There's a museum called, I think, I don't want to pronounce this wrong, the Skipperstadt or Schipperstadt. I don't know.
Okay.
It's a long word, but they have recordings of disembodied voices and a lot of, you know, just eerie personal experiences. The Mason-Dixon Paranormal Society has concluded that the Skipper Stat, I'll say, Architectural Museum is haunted. They conducted a two-night investigation about 3 weeks ago, and they met with the museum staff on Monday to tell them their findings. The investigation, this is interesting, the investigation was open to the public for a fee, and, you know, it was for charity for the museum, just to benefit the museum.
Right.
And the group collected about 70 hours of audio recordings, 2 hours of thermal imaging video, and 180 hours of audio. And after reviewing everything, they came away with 35 EVPs, and some of them are in response to their questions saying yes or no. Now, twice they say they recorded a child's voice saying what sounds like mommy, and other recordings, they sound like they're in German, which they say is fitting because the museum was originally, or the town, I guess, was home to German settlers.
Interesting.
So that would make sense. But they even got some longer phrases, like they have a deep, raspy voice that says, on the wall over there. So they caught a few things. So if I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
Very cool. But that's in Maryland, you said?
Architectural Museum, Maryland. Frederick County, Maryland, yes.
All right, very cool. Well, we'll have to check that out, Tim. Maybe that's a location we can investigate on one of our future investigations.
I was kind of hoping the child voice would say, I'm late for my bus. Can you tell me where to go? Because it's a museum and, you know, there's field trips to the museum.
I'm lost. Yeah. All right, where are we off to next, Bree?
The next one I want to mention is in Georgia.
Okay.
Ghost hunters in Georgia have claimed that Lafayette's historic Marsh House has paranormal activity. And they're saying they can't say that it's haunted for sure, but they, and because they don't have, I guess, conclusive data about that, but they say there is paranormal activity there. Rick Howard, who is the lead investigator with Ghosts and History of Southeastern Tennessee, it's a nonprofit group that, you know, does paranormal investigations, he was basically, you know, he's the one that came out and said they don't have conclusive data, but he is claiming there is activity there. And this was a few weeks back. A team of about 11 people from the group used IR cameras, audio, and, all, you know, everything, at the mansion. The mansion was built in 1836 and was occupied by Union troops during the Civil War, and they said horses were actually ridden through the downstairs hall. Some of the floorboards were just, you know, soaked in blood. Bullets were shot through the house and everything. It's got a big history to it. And the investigators took about 357 pictures, couldn't find any evidence in the pictures, but they, again, another group got 16 hours of audio, and they got some EVPs. They got some voices, I guess, that said the word see, help me, hurry and leave this house. So they got a few things.
Yeah, there. It sounds like.
Yeah. Lisa, and one more house. What were you going to say?
Now, what's the name of that team?
This is the Ghosts and History of Southeastern Tennessee.
Ghosts and History of Southeastern Tennessee. Okay, well, cool. We'll keep an eye out on that. Maybe people can look up the website. Maybe they post some of their EVPs on there as well.
Right. Yeah, again, it's the Marsh House in Lafayette.
Okay.
So, and another haunted house is in McLeod, California. Stephen Elizabeth Clapper purchased the historic McLeod Century House in 1993. Since they bought it, there have been repeated reports of suspicious and mysterious activities. They decided to call the Redding Paranormal Investigations Team. The building, history on the building, it was built in 1903, and it was the first hospital in the county. It's Siskiyou County in McLeod, California, and it remained a hospital until the late 60s. The Clappers began restoring it, and they turned it into a bed and breakfast. And they said from the beginning they experienced strange things like footsteps in the hallway and the stairway, a dark figure standing in the hallway, and then the next minute it's gone. And guests in the bed and breakfast have also reported the same kinds of things. One lady said she made up her bed and left her room, and then she returned and she noticed, you know, like a wrinkled spot on the bed where someone had been sitting. And so anyway, they called up Redding Paranormal Investigations Team. They saw them on Craigslist, and they called them. The team came, took a tour of the house, and then they set up their equipment, and they were there until about 4 a.m. the next morning. And the team members reported seeing shadows and a dark figure going up a staircase, and they heard footsteps in the hallways where there was nobody. And they also reported that as one of the team members was leaving a room, someone was heard saying, I'm all right. And the team member says nobody else was there. So she actually heard, I'm all right. And strange things started happening from day one, like I said, is what they're claiming. And
okay.
Steve, the owner, said he hears footsteps in the hallway, but nobody's there.
Weird stuff. Perfect. Paranormal, normal haunting activity. We have to take another break here. We'll be right back. We've got more news with Bree Sanders. Stay tuned. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. Good evening. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Right now we're talking with national news correspondent Bree Sanders. We'll be back after the top of the hour. We're going to be joined by cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman. We're going to be talking about Bigfoot sightings, cryptid sightings. And I want to delve into this strange black cat panther sightings that are being seen all over the world right now, see if there's any kind of correlation they're finding in the realm of cryptozoology. But right now we're going to go back to national news stories of the strange and weird with our very own Bree Sanders. Bree, where are we off to next?
We're going to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I have a pretty kind of an extensive story here. It's a UFO report that was printed recently. So it's interesting, though. Two hunters were in the woods in Elk County, Pennsylvania, in the middle of the night. They say it was about 4:45 a.m. on October 4th in 2008. It had been raining, and it was really dark. I guess they said the only lighting they had was a hat light, like a mini mag light, you know. As they walked further into the woods, they started hearing coyotes howling, and they could hear it all over, like all surrounding them. And they said it sounded like three packs of them.
Okay.
And they hunted really often, and they said they'd never heard that before. And it got so loud, they actually couldn't communicate with each other very well. Basically, they're saying suddenly, about 150 to 200 yards ahead, on the other side of the field, they noticed two dim glowing lights. The lights were about the size of a baseball and 2 feet apart, about 15 feet above the ground also. The two men thought the lights were odd, but considered that maybe there were some hunters ahead. So they shut off their lights, and as they walked forward in the distance toward where they saw the first two lights, they now saw what looked like a flashing beam flashing back and forth between the tree line. At first, they didn't think this was odd either because it was archery season, and there was a possibility that other hunters were out there. So they thought it could just be other
it's
people.
It's archery season, which automatically means there's people out there with glowing green balls, Tim.
Well, don't we all have glowing green balls at one time or another, Dave?
So I don't know that I follow the logic on that, Bree, but I'll tag along just to see where the story goes.
All right.
It's a little known fact, yeah, Nami, that most dodges have glowing green balls. That is frightening. All right.
Anyway, within minutes of seeing the single light beam, about 10 individual white beams of light suddenly came on. And they flashed around. They said it didn't look like someone was carrying them or anything, but they appeared to be 10 feet above the ground and parallel with the ground. And one of the men actually asked out loud, how many are there? And it seemed odd that the two hunters, that these lights did not seem to be trying to find a path through the woods, like a person holding a flashlight, I guess. So they got pretty confused. But then they saw a glowing figure moving up from the area of the beams of light, and it was a human-like form. It moved about 20 feet out into a grass field, and the beams of light suddenly went out, and one of the men described the being as similar to a silhouette of a person just completely glowing, as if they were wearing glow-in-the-dark paint. And I guess there was one light being shown on it, but all the others were out at this point. It was about 3 feet tall, and the head was a little bit larger than a human. The upper part of the body seemed to kind of hunch forward a little bit, and the arms were hanging straight down and were also longer than a human's arms. But they couldn't see the legs very well, I guess, because the light was blocking out the shape. But they said it was actually glowing, like a lime green color. Whatever they saw moved about twice the speed of the two guys who were walking really fast. They got scared, obviously, and they started walking away. And they said, from what they could see, it didn't even look like it was walking. It seemed like it was gliding, and they couldn't hear it move at all. All of a sudden, it just kind of stopped suddenly and remained motionless for about 30 seconds. Then it moved about 20 feet, they said, back into the field, and then just vanished in front of their eyes, just completely vanished. Within about 2 minutes after it disappeared, all the coyotes that they were hearing just stopped howling. So it's creepy. I mean, the entire thing lasted only about 5 minutes, you know. But they went back later that day.
Turns out that they saw Dipsy from the Teletubbies, the glowing lime green.
That's what you picture.
Creepy figure.
Uh-oh, everybody. Eat Dipsy.
I don't know what's more scary.
Yeah, that's...
God.
Or that I can do an impersonation of Dipsy.
No.
And I didn't know when you're being chased by Dipsy that it was a fight, flight, or speedwalking response.
Exactly.
Anyway, so that was
That's weird. Yeah, no doubt.
You know? And I don't know how much time we have, but I have kind of a longer story about another...
Go for it. We got about 4 minutes left here.
Okay, it might fit perfectly. Okay, this was just an interesting article to me I saw. This is a woman named Jane Nelms, and it's her account of her abduction. Basically, she is the president of the UFO Society in Plano, Texas, just to start that off.
Well, how do you become president? Do you have to have been abducted?
I assume you start the group.
Oh, okay. Damn it.
You know, Jane Nelms says that throughout her life, she's had constant visitors from other planets. She said it all started one night in 1973 when a white light appeared in her bedroom window. She said she pulled the drape aside, and all of a sudden there were five beings surrounding her. She has drawn pictures of them. She said they came in and took her. She couldn't move. She was trying to grab these railings, I guess, that were on the ship or something that, or maybe it was in her house. I guess that would make more sense. She was trying to grab the railings, whatever that means, to stop herself from being taken. And she said she couldn't do anything. They had total control over her. They carried her to their ship. One of them spoke to her and said in a monotone voice, "Jane, it is your time to come." And I said, "I'm not going anywhere." He said, "Why?" I guess jumbled English. "Why not you come with us?" Very few words he spoke, but, you know, she said, "Because I need to be on Earth. I have family, all this stuff." And they took her anyway. Anyway, so 1993.
Damn aliens. No means no.
No. Except if you're an alien.
Yeah, I guess if you're an alien, no means nothing because they don't speak our language. Why you no come?
And I find it interesting they talk like Frankenstein. Yeah, exactly. Hey, you come now.
Maybe, wait, her name was Jane?
Jane Helm.
Maybe it's Tarzan, not Frankenstein.
I bet.
Right.
You come with me.
Or Tonto. It's that whole Tonto Frankenstein exactly. Tarzan bit. Yeah.
Well, anyway, she didn't speak about what happened to her for years. And then she, you know, started meeting other people who claimed to have similar experiences near Dallas. She moved to a town named Carrollton, and she claims the aliens actually followed her and started harassing the people around her. She said one night she got a frightening phone call from a neighbor, and the neighbor said there were three different types of beings coming down the hallway and that the fans in the house started rotating in the opposite direction and the lights were flashing.
Those crazy aliens.
Crazy aliens.
We'll impress them with our ability. Make the fan go backwards.
She said, how creepy. If this is true, it's really creepy. She said these little balls of light started flying around everywhere and that one of the beings was so tall it could hardly get through the door. And then, I guess, they say it, you know, they abducted her neighbor, just like they'd abducted her. She said also, to throw this in, that when she was on the ship, she said there were all different kinds, like species of aliens, and some of them were wearing civilian clothes, some of them spoke other languages, and they told her they were not going to harm her, they just wanted to do some examinations on her. And she says that she confronted those same aliens that night where her neighbor got abducted. And she says she has evidence that they were there. She says she has the fingerprints off of it. I guess they had fingerprints on her car.
Ah, more fingerprints on cars. Bigfoot and aliens. We figured it out. Hey, Bree, can we put up a link to this story? We got to wrap up for this evening, but let's get a link up to the story so people can read the whole account. Would that
Definitely.
Be all right?
I'll send it to you because it's pretty long.
Great. All right, well, thank you very much, Bree. We appreciate it. We will be back with you next week with a whole new set of stories. Sound fun?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
She's like, maybe you will, maybe you won't. All right, Bree, have a good one. Thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned. We've got Lauren Coleman, the cryptozoologist, coming up next right here on Darkness Radio. Thank you.
If you're a label reader, this one's for you. Because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house, in small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients, plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals, and safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler, just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Hiba Botanica, non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HibaBotanica.com. That's X.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.